Hello and welcome to the Culture File Weekly with me, Luke Clancy, and some nice outdoorsy activities cleverly disguised as artworks. Well, it is June, and what sort of trousers do you need right now? Hard to know, confesses novelist Joanna Walsh a little bit later on, and we'll all end up on Shirkin Island dancing to Suriman's Keseko at this year's Open Ear Music Festival, but we start this time by disrupting some habits of perception. Renata Prakowska is a Dublin-based artist and researcher who's been leading drawing workshops as a way to explore attention in a world where attention is a commodity taken from us and sold on for profit. For Prakowska and the people who gather at her workshops, drawing and the way it permits us to experience the world, particularly when allied with careful listening, might be a key tool to resist the attention economy. Renata has a little drawing exercise for you at the end of this piece, so pencil and paper at the ready for that. But first, Culture File's Quailen McNamara attended Renata Prakowska's recent workshop at IMA in Kilmainham.
My name is Renata Penkowska. I am a visual artist and a researcher. My background as a visual artist includes architectural studies, a craft design degree, critical theory, and user interaction and user experience design.
Listening, we are kind of like listening and drawing session as well.
Today, I am leading two listening and drawing sessions under the common theme Drawn to Sound. And I am inviting the participants to explore drawing to sound as a way of intent listening, which produces visual evidence of the listening process and of individual responses.
Two-part workshop today, so this is the first part.
The first part of Drawn to Sound will take place in IMA Gardens, where we will listen to the natural sounds and the sounds of the environment.
I'm going to do something that hopefully you will find interesting. I'm going to do a little bit of a so-called sound walk. We will walk and we will listen and we will sit outside and we will draw. So I would like us maybe all to consider this idea of maybe listening and seeing. Our ears tell us where to look, this kind of a connection, again, between hearing and seeing. This is not really interesting.
It's very beautiful.
John Ruskin famously and repeatedly claimed that to draw is to really start seeing. In the present age of online hyper-ocular centrism, can drawing, which is an essentially a visual process and output, respond to non-visual input and thus be used to redirect attention from the dominant sense of vision? Or can it communicate the multisensory experience in a nonverbal way? Can the humble technology of pencil and paper assume new roles in our online lives of distraction, like caring for attention and expressing subjectivity and neurodiversity? We will be listening to the soundtrack of Lisa Freeman's video and to the interval track composed by Sean McErlane.
Do you ever put on a bit of a persona when you are walking around the city? Well, you always pretend not to know me in public.
I didn't realize, I guess, I'm just taking it all in.
You've got to take it all a lot slower when you have luggage, don't you? It would be nice to feel the sunlight on our skin.
I see expanded forms of drawing workshops as research and artistic practice, and as events which can disrupt perception habits, retune attention, and restore sensory nuance. Assembling the situation of sensory attention and deepened sensory focus within a group can be set against what Sherry Turkle refers to as continuous, sustained partial attention of interacting with the online platforms. Sociable group aspect and intersubjectivity of a workshop setting can mitigate the visual media's alienating effects, de-selfing the online self, and work against individualism towards seeing oneself as part of human and non-human world. Presently, I am planning more of these events over the summer and then after the summer, which will involve not only sound, but other sensory input like smell or touch. I would like to end the interview with a track by Dublin electronic sound artist Collision Objects from their album Sensory Routines, which can be found online. And I would like to invite the listeners to take time after this to take a pencil and paper and listen to this or other piece of music in a quiet space with no distractions and try listening and drawing for themselves.
Thank you.
Second repetition from Collision Objects there, generative music programming inspired by the theory of rhythm analysis and wearable self-tracking technology. And listening to that while drawing was the suggestion of Renata Pokowska, who you heard there at her recent Drawn to Sound workshop, in a report from Quaylen McNamara. And there'll be another drawing session later in the summer. Keep an eye on our social media for more information on that. In the meantime, feel free to share any drawings or other outcomes from your soundtrack session. Email culture@rte.ie. Now, trousers. You can't live with them, you can't live without them. But should they be skinny or ballooning right now? What stage of the legroom cycle are you at? And what can pants ever mean? Here now to answer finally very few of these questions is Joanna Walsh with a fit check. We probably won't end up calling it that.
I'm not here to tell you what's in fashion, because nothing ever is. Fashion is never about how you look now, but always how you might look in the future. Fashion shows take place in their inverse season, 6 months ahead. Autumn shows in spring and spring in autumn. The big fashion seasons, spring and fall, are seasons of transition. Then there are restless cruise or resort collections, and every brand has a monthly drop, each offering an identical chance of entire self-reinvention that doubles down on fashion's future-facing illusion. Jean shapes, in particular, change so frequently that more than being a sign that the wearer is in fashion, they're a sign of fashion itself. Not only a barometer of how fashions change, they reveal fashion as change. They also reveal that it's impossible to wear the right jeans. Fashion dictates that by the time you are wearing them, they're exactly the opposite of the jeans that are in fashion, which exist only as prediction. The return of low-waisted denim has been Cassandra'd for some time, and I've seen predictions of the skinny jeans return as early as 2022, before so many people had stopped wearing them for the last time around. Does this really constitute a break? 2024 skinny jeans are not 2010 skinny jeans, and 2010 skinnies are also not the skinny jeans of 2016, which had morphed until they were high-waisted and contained lycra, something that drew them many fans from the non-skinny population. I finally gave myself permission to dress my body in a form-fitting item, wrote fat activist Mary Suthard Ospina on the website Refinery29, mourning the style in 2021. My big legs felt luxurious under this fresh type of denim. I was almost, sort of, comfortable. The skinny in skinny jeans is a transposition, a literal figure of speech. In ancient Greek rhetoric, this is called hyperlarge, or transferred epithet, in which the syntactic relationship between two terms is interchanged. It's not so much that the jeans are skinny, but this is the figure they require of the wearer, or the figure they promise to deliver. With skinny jeans, this transposition is two-way, creating another rhetorical device, personification. The jeans, claiming the human attribute of skinniness, begin to have more agency than their wearer. If the perfect storm of trends combines, the new skinnies will be both low-waisted and lycra-free, fashion as it's often figured as dictation. The new skinny jeans rumour is mostly put about in the negative, the opposite of typical fashion speak gushing enthusiasm. But why fear fashion? Why feel it's coming for you and there's nowhere to hide? There are enough fashion columns telling you to wear what you like, as though this were easy to define, and as though liking wasn't at least partially social. The necessity of liking what's about to be in fashion entirely encompasses the discourse of alternatives. Discourse, as the word was defined by the French philosopher Michel Foucault, is a hegemonic framework that hides its own power by harking back to some mysterious justification from the past. In fashion, this is usually a quote by Diana Vreeland. Critique is totally allowed by the discourse because, as Foucault wrote, it gives us the opportunity to say something other than the text itself, but on condition that it is the text itself that is reiterated. As Foucault warns, the novelty lies no longer in what is said, but in its reappearance. Or in the case of the reappearance of a style of jeans, this means you can wear the old style only in context of the new, and vice versa. A ghost style always hovers around your look. Whenever you wear the new skinny jeans, you're also wearing a spectral pair of baggies. I haven't noticed skinny jeans on the street yet, except on people who are still wearing them from the last time around. Or maybe I can't read a discourse so complicated that layered under the two conceptual jeans you're already wearing, there's another pair of old-style skinnies you're definitely not. You can't wear the right jeans for the wrong reason. That would be cringe. Cringe, far from making change impossible, is the hinge on which fashion turns. With denim, this may have started with mom jeans, then dad jeans and boyfriend jeans, all styles basing their appeal on being dowdy until only fashionable jeans were utterly unfashionable. Lean into cringe and you might be getting somewhere. Amy Smilovich, the CEO of the fashion label Tibby, calls this the good ick, that hint of mental discomfort that creates a gap for something new. Smilovich usually brings it with such déclassé items, because let's not pretend that ick isn't all about class, as a white patent shoe, or a neon turquoise synthetic ruched top that looks like a disco swimming costume made of ballroom curtains. She uses them to give edge to a classic wool blazer or a too elegant silk slip dress. So is it bad to look good? Yes, because fashion is not an end point, it's a process. The French thinker Jacques Rancière had a similar theory about art. Anything considered not art is ripe for conversion, because that's what art is. Art is constituted and transformed, he writes, by welcoming images, objects and performances that seemed most opposed to the idea of fine art. Applied to fashion, which is also an art, this means that whatever you're wearing right now is only in fashion if it's the least fashionable thing you can think of.
Joanna Walsh there on The Discourse of Trousers. Look down now, what do you see? Of all the boutique-y musical festivals happening in Ireland this June, maybe the boutiquiest of all took place over the bank holiday weekend, when experimental musicians and their fans took the ferry to Sherkin Island in West Cork to co-celebrate the latest Edenic edition of the Open Ear Festival. Among the happy campers shooting and recording the breeze was Culturefile's Vanessa Noonan, who sent us this audio postcard.
The northern shore of Sherkin Island, which only takes about a full day to get to from Dublin, was once again transformed this weekend into the beating, clanging heart of Irish experimental music. We arrived on Friday evening, the sky already beginning to turn pink, as we pitched our tents and the heavy electronic sounds floated towards us from the main stage at Bangor Cliff. The night's acts were characterised by a more harsh electronic sound and bumping rhythms.
My name is Dan. I make music as Ossia. Yeah, so I was playing my own tracks, that sort of pre-recorded rhythms which I was arranging in a live way and in a kind of noisy, dub, hellish, whatever, I don't know, yeah, something like that way. I just kind of improvise from there and go with whatever kind of flow presents itself, whatever energy I find, like between the crowd and the sounds and my own feeling, like trying to concentrate on how I feel when I'm playing the music and go from there, basically.
On Saturday morning, we ambled our way back down the hill, halfway across the island, past the little lagoon where silverfish jump out of the water, to the community centre, where the Ambient Orbit crew were doing a live ambient improvisational performance for all the sore heads on the island.
I'm Maeve McKenna, and I was playing as a part of the Ambient Orbit project today. We were kind of guiding each other, I think. There was a lot of response to the recordings and to each other. There was some lovely moments where some of the patterns of the waves were kind of became rhythmic patterns that we followed, or some of the bird songs became like almost like a duet partner, which was really, it was fun to like mimic and answer. Because as well as the recorded sounds of Sherkin Island, we also had the live presence of Sherkin Island and the people there, which really made it a whole different experience as well, you know. So it's also an exercise in the present moment, and we had a beautiful baby sing along for a little bit at the beginning, and thankfully the baby seemed to like what we were doing, because she or he was very quiet for the rest of it.
Back up the cliff, we had a full day of exciting and varied performances, starting with more live ambient from violin and synth duo Dublin, some specifically commissioned haunting pop from Elaine Howley and The Cyclist, and some freak folk drone from Moundabout, and I could use many more adjectives here, but I'll stick to three. But here's what my friend Anna said.
What, are you into it or not into it?
I'm into what happened. There was actually more genres than I've seen in a single set ever.
This is the way we go, lads. This is the way we go. All the way from Manor Hamilton, all the way to Glamorous.
Hello, my name is Percy Tooth. Just played at Open Ear. Woo! The set was an incorporation of sampling a multitude of different OST video game soundtracks and different like rudimentary sounds that you get from video games, particularly horror video games. So doors opening and closing, zombies growling, all this kind of strange stuff, and then kind of making that into a weird ambient cacophony. I lost my hearing like 2 years ago, so I got like surgery, I got a cochlear implant, so all of this music would be like music that I've made with this new sonic palette. So I think all of the friends, all of the homies, they stood up and they gave a sock, they gave a help.
On Sunday, we followed the sounds of experimentation across the length of the island, beginning with Amanda Fury's reimagining and reworking of her and artist Emer Walsh's collaborative opera, this time adapting it specifically for the contours and corridors of the ruined Franciscan Abbey right at the other end of Shirkin Island. More performances in churches and beaches lured us back to the main stage and then beyond to the secret beach, where a group of young Cork lads set up a barber's, cutting hair to the soundtrack of the island's sounds and energies being performed on drums and electronic instruments.
I'm Stephen McLaughlin. I work as Antrant, and I was working with my friend Nicola Serra, who's Il Santo Bevatore.
When we were here, it was like sunny here and there, but like it was like quite stormy. He had this like kind of like a soma ether, you call it, which is like kind of, it detects a lot of the very noisy stuff, all the sort of like electronic stuff in the atmosphere. It's like picking up plants and all the rock. It reminds me of where I'm from up north, right, where there's so much like basalt and stuff around, which is like very like kind of like, it's like quite radioactive. I was pretty much just like sort of running around town, sticking it to anything that would stick to. I found like one or two different beautiful fields where it was like very, very long, thin wires going around these fields. It was like so taut. The wind was kind of like sort of playing it like an instrument.
Did you both notice that people were getting their hair cut like during?
No. I saw afterwards. Like,
there had of course been plenty of dancing the whole weekend long, and the festival ended in this way, with the attendees gathering to dance together in one salty, sweaty, sunburnt cluster of movement. I didn't record any of this because I was too busy dancing, but I got one of the DJs, Joey, to recommend me a song to end the piece on and to tell me a little bit about how it felt to bring the house down.
Yeah, there was one moment during the set where I literally looked up, because I'm actually very shy, so I was looking at the decks. I looked up and I was like, whoa. I was like, it was crazy. Like, it filled up, like, it's crazy. So for me, the last song was very important because it's a Suriname song, and I'm from Suriname partly, and not many people know about Suriname, so I wanted to represent it. So the song is called Buka by Uptight. Thank you.
Buka, 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 buka بخيتك حسن على وسطك يا بخيتك حسن على وسطك حسن حسن كامر بوكا 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 بوكا
Fancy footwork there from Suriname's Aptai with Boca, the closing track at this year's Open Ear Festival on Shirkin Island, and also the closing track of this very Culture File Weekly. We'll be back with more salt-encrusted sonic experiments next Saturday tea time. Till then, bye now.